Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome to the A&N and After Show. It's me, Lindsay Loveridge, and with me is my podcast companion, James Beckett.
Yo. I'm the nibbles to your Jerry, as it were.
very timely, because we're actually going to be before we get into the anime award discourse, of which there is much. If you've been over to Anime News Network, we've got all the results for the anime awards up there. We've also got a This Week in Anime up that's got the same title as this video, or the Anime Awards Broken, where Nicholas Dupree and Steve Jones are talking about, you know, their takes on the results. But there's just too much to dig into, so James and I have to yell too.
Yeah,
it's what we're really good at. So we want to get in on that, and we're not going to let Steve and Nick take all the fun. But before we do that, this was brought to my attention by Isaiah Colbert, who is freelance for us, and you can find them over on Twitter and Blue Sky. Great writer, but they sent this video over to me, and I was not aware that there was like a Tom and Jerry in Japan. I knew that the original cartoon was popular there, and I've encountered multiple times, like, talking about what was your favorite anime to people in the industry, and they'll say like Tom and Jerry. Did not know that it got this really cute little anime. This is animated by Studio Nanahoshi, which is a fairly new studio, and the director is Kodai Sato, who's done a bunch of CG work, like for Love Live Sunshine, for instance. Mm. Or no, original Love Live! School Idol Project, as well as like Rage of Bahamut Genesis and some other stuff. But this one, it doesn't look CG. It at least appears to be 2D, but is so cute. So this is just a minute long, and we wanted to share it all with you guys. So let me get this up here for you.
If it is CG, it's one of those, I really think that the industry is getting very good at, I think we finally learned, and I think things like Across the Spider-Verse and other productions have really helped.
Yeah.
People realize that the 2D aesthetic has a lot of inherent benefits.
Yeah.
And even if you're working in 3D to make the modeling easier or whatever, you can still really get a lot out of the traditional 2D perspective just when it comes to things like comedy. Is the sound supposed to be playing? Because I can't hear.
Oh, you can't hear the sound?
No.
Okay, hold on. Let me restart, because that was looking pretty cute, and I want you guys to be able to hear it.
The sound makes it even cuter, guys.
It does. It makes it super cute. There we go. I just needed to toggle.
It sounds like the opening of Viva Pinata, which already puts me in.
Well, that brings me back. I got mad at those pinatas. Really mad at those pinatas. My husband has some horror stories about watching me play Viva Pinata and just like not, and just freaking out.
God, those pancakes look delicious. I don't really know what Nibbles is drinking, but.
Yeah. JBS, where is this hosted? This is on Twitter. Yeah, I can't tell if those are pancakes or some sort of like flan mix.
I think they have to be some kind of like super fluffy pancake.
Yeah.
Or like an angel food cake kind of thing.
Oh yeah. But see how it bounces reminds me of flan.
That's true. We're good.
Oh no.
Can I say that Japanese voice actors are truly the masters of hilarious little nonverbal like onomatopoeia sounds?
Yeah.
Like the little munchy munchy like mish 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 mish, mish sounds mish, they make.
Yeah. So that was the whole thing. That's a little Tom and Jerry short where Tom is working in a diner and Jerry and Nibbles attempt to steal delicious desserts. It made my day, so I just kind of wanted to share it all with you guys.
I do love that it was specifically set like in an American diner, but they're eating like French, like or not French bakery food, but like basically just nothing but cake and ice cream.
Yeah, that's true, right? I'm going to be in Japan in 2 weeks from tomorrow, and it's like last time I went there, my husband and I definitely went into a French style, you know, it wasn't authentic, but you could get like a whole stack of like giant, like a tower of pancakes, and the desserts were just, and the aesthetic was just so cute, immaculate. Hoping to do that again. For those of you guys on Facebook and YouTube, I dropped a link to the Twitter account that's hosting that if you'd like to, you know, watch it again or share it with your friends. So, all right. So with that said, wow, we've got a lot of viewers today, actually. Shout out to the 500-ish people who are here to hear our takes on the Anime Awards. Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, so disclaimer, I am a judge for the Anime Awards. They invite me at their own risk. I'm going to abide by all the rules in which I can. I can't talk about too much like behind the scenes how this works, but I will be able to complain, and you can just know that my complaints are well-informed. Unless I'm wrong, in which case I made a mistake and I'm sorry, but preemptively, I think I know what I'm talking about. So, all right. So the Crunchyroll Anime Awards, this is a live show for the last 2 years. It's been in Tokyo, which means kind of complaint maybe number one. It is hosted in the evening in Japan, which means at least for those of us on Pacific time zone, if you want to watch it live, you have to stay up until 2 a.m. I did not do that. I woke up in the morning and just read the results. I mean, as much as like Megan Thee Stallion looked amazing, I wasn't going to stay up for the whole thing just to see her. So can I give you my scorecard for this? I don't think I can give you my scorecard, but I can tell you as we read off what I would have liked to see win, although I can either confirm or deny whether I actually voted for it or not. But anyone who looked at the results the next morning probably saw that Jujutsu Kaisen Season 2 ran away with the awards. And we've seen anime kind of go home with 6, 7, 8 awards. And it's been My Hero Academia. It's been Yuri on Ice in the past. Megalobox won a lot of awards its year.
That show so much.
It's a really good show, right?
So good.
Such a good show. And
Season 2.
Season 2 is also really, really good. Last year, there was a bit of a shakeup because Cyberpunk Edgerunners won Anime of the Year, which a lot of people were surprised because it's not a Crunchyroll show. That was a Netflix show. That being said, Jujutsu Kaisen Season 2 was far and away the winner. It won, I think a third of what it was nominated for, a third of the categories. Yeah, just a lot. One of our freelance writers, Nicholas Dupree, made a great graphic to show visually what the award turnout was. And this, I think, doesn't include the voice actor awards, which would make these numbers even higher. So if you can see this, we've got JJK Season 2 with, oh, sorry. I don't know why it was blinking there. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 awards. Chainsaw Man with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Demon Slayer with 3. One Piece with 2. Spy Family with 2. Attack on Titan, the final season. The final chapter special 1 with 2 awards. And then you've got the genre ones here at the end, which is and Best Original, which is Buddy Daddy's got Best Original. Horimiya, The Missing Pieces was Best Romance. Bocchi the Rock was Best Slice of Life. Oshinoko got Best Song for its opening idol. I'm actually not sure what Dr. Stone won off the top of my head.
Let me see.
And then Suzume took Best Picture. So that was sort of the results summarized. But if you look, and there's a lot of, James and I are going to kind of get into what we think might help the awards as far as diversity of winners, areas in the system that could possibly be improved to prevent this, because there's multiple problems that are wrong that cause this to happen. One of it is a lack of diversity in actual nominees, which that falls on the judges. The judges of the Anime Awards submit nominees. So what you were able to vote on was entirely based on the judge pool, which is large. I believe it's more than 30, less than 50-ish people. There's quite a few judges that are all submitting their nominees of what they think should be in each category. As far as I know at this point, there is no sort of like safeguard to prevent certain anime from ending up in a whole bunch of categories. If like, because judges don't know what other judges are putting down. Mm-hmm. So we don't know how many people put JJK for anime of the year versus best action and yada yada. There's no like comparing notes. So it's very easy for enough people to do every single category, and then you end up with JJK in so many categories. And there aren't any fail safes. There doesn't appear to be any fail safes or overhead where someone goes, you know, this could lead to this anime winning, you know, 14 awards.
Yeah.
To kind of like step in here. And if someone did step in and do that, we as a judge panel wouldn't know, because we don't know who, what everyone else put down. Right. Personally, I think they need some sort of QA, QC sort of situation to prevent this. Unless we're all in agreement that JJK deserved all of those nominations and thus the ability to win all of those awards.
Yeah.
Another issue, and James, I'll let you talk a little more about this. What do you think about the timeline of where nominees need to fall into in order?
I think it's very confusing. Mm-hmm. Because now, correct me if I'm wrong. It's the what's the official like cutoff date for like when a series is eligible for the year's awards? Is it the beginning of the winter season or?
I don't know like the precise date, but it would be, these awards were from the October 2022 season, which mm-hmm. included Chainsaw Man, all the way up to what would be September 2023. So none of the fall 2023 season.
Got you.
So that's the bracket.
Yes. I think that's very confusing because you have shows, for instance, that aired their entire run or most of their run during the window in which, for instance, JJK technically wouldn't have been eligible or wouldn't have been eligible if it hadn't had that mid-core break between its first 5-episode arc and then the rest of the season, which mm-hmm. I would argue if we were judging JJK as a whole, that's where the series really drops off a lot in quality. And mm-hmm. I think for me would make it a lot harder for it to be. I mean, I think it would be weird to say, okay, if we're not considering anything from this September to December window, right? This, mm-hmm. You know, this quarter of the year where a lot of really awesome and excellent shows aired and a lot of really cool and interesting and titles that could have more diversity of these rosters aired, then why is it okay for a show that aired 5 episodes in the October chunk or right before and then went on break and then aired the rest of its season during that same window? Like, why is that eligible for anime of the year but none of the other shows are?
Yeah. So to clarify, with JJK season 2, the premature death / hidden inventory arc premiered in July. Those 5 episodes were from July 7th to August 3rd. And then, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah. But then there was a break for most of August. So this is also kind of where the cutoff gets weird. There was a break for most of August, and then the Shibuya arc started on the 31st of August. So I could see lumping that one episode in with the rest, which would make it fall into September. So this created a weird conundrum, and several judges, including myself, were on a podcast where this question got brought up because we weren't clear on it. We were clear on the September cutoff, but we were unclear about the JJK situation. It was obviously already nominated, but we didn't know if this was supposed to include the entirety of season 2, including Shibuya incident arc, or if it was just supposed to specifically include the hidden inventory premature death arc because of that break in between. Normally, I would think that if it had aired continuously without a break, we were supposed to consider all of it. Right? Because there's no break in between. Or otherwise, it's very strange to tell someone to like arbitrarily quit paying attention after a certain episode. You know, if this was, you know, that would be very strange and hard to communicate. And that's exactly what happened, because we as judges didn't know if we were supposed to be considering Shibuya Incident Arc. And during the podcast, I was like, well, let's go see how it's being communicated on the voting page. On the voting page, there wasn't, when you picked what you were voting for, it didn't differentiate the arcs. It just said Jujutsu Kaisen Season 2. And the key visual attached to it was a more comprehensive key visual. It wasn't the specific premature death arc visual that we are now seeing in all the award announcement post after the fact. So if we weren't supposed to be considering Shibuya Incident, I don't think that was well communicated to the judges specifically. And I definitely don't think the 34 million viewers who participated in the voting when this went up were like, no, I'm only thinking about those arcs right now while I'm picking my votes. They were definitely considering Shibuya Incident. It's too much to ask the general populace to like adhere to these guidelines when they're doing their votes. So I think that was a major issue. Another just general problem we've talked about here on the podcast, but I mean, how do you feel about, given all the baggage attached to this particular show, how do you feel about it getting anime of the year?
Now, when you said baggage, are you talking like the major production issues?
Yes.
I think a lot of it kind of comes down to something we were talking about off mic, where when we're looking at the way that the show is being, or the way that the awards are being tallied, right? It's open to the public. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the judges help kind of determine who gets on the ballot and the shows that are like in the pool. But then when it comes to like, you know, the actual winning of the awards, it's basically just a mass popularity contest, which, I mean, technically that's what award shows often get boiled down to. But I would argue the difference is that in other industry award shows, things like the Oscars or the Tonys or what have you, you have these voting organizations, and each of the award shows runs them differently. And sometimes you also have awards that are open to the public as well. But there often is some sort of element of kind of industry knowledge, professional knowledge that is being taken into account with which properties are winning which awards, which is criticism of this method is that this is kind of what results in there being sometimes a big disconnect between what wins awards versus what makes the money.
Right.
Because the people that know what goes into making films, producing stage plays, making music, they're going to have very different perspectives on what qualifies as a really successful, really important, really awards-worthy piece versus something that was just really, really popular general audiences.
Right.
And the reason that I bring all that up is because when we talk about like the baggage and the really kind of the kind of turning point that the industry as a whole seems to be experiencing with this massive boom in production versus these very, very public displays of discontent when it comes to the way that the actual staff making these things are being treated and being compensated and being valued. I think these are things where if the voting board that was kind of steering the ship in regards to what was being awarded what was comprised of people that knew that was aware of these issues, that was able to take those things into account and was able to kind of use that perspective to determine, okay, is this something that as a whole piece is the anime that we want to say like achieved the most in the best way possible of all the other shows this year versus the millions and millions of people who don't even go on Twitter, who don't know anything about the controversies, about the production and the treatment of the staff. And yeah, I mean, there are arguments to be had about whether or not that is something that people should consider, you know, separate the art from the artist or the controversy behind the scenes from the finished product. But I mean, anyone that knows anything about other professional respected award shows knows that kind of stuff matters. Like for instance, I think a perfect example is kind of a counter example when it comes to like recognizing the people working behind the scenes is the editing award, the editing Oscar that Bohemian Rhapsody won a couple years back.
Right.
Where it won that award and people are like, what the, how?
Because
like,
of that table scene, right? The
yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. People are like, how could this food, like even if the movie wasn't as horribly edited as that one scene was the whole time, why would this film win? But at least from what I've read, my understanding is that the people voting in the editing category know what goes into editing a film, and especially knows what goes into editing a production disaster.
Yeah.
And it was basically the fact that this film is coherent enough to be viewable is a minor miracle.
Oh, and so, okay.
And at least that's my understanding. I was reading some behind the scenes stuff, and basically the story was that like the people in Hollywood, the editors that are you know, members of the Academy, basically said, yeah, this guy deserves an award because holy crap, the fact that this movie is even functional is almost impossible.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think that that should be the norm, but I do think that, for instance, if a very big budget, high profile thing was made, and then we suddenly found out that it came at the expense of a lot of people's mental and physical well-being, that might temper your expectations. Like, imagine, and this is a complete random example, but if anyone is aware of the horrible catastrophe surrounding the production of the Twilight Zone movie,
yes.
John Landis, very famously, his negligent directing resulted in the deaths of several actors, including two minors, ruined his career. Now that's an extreme example, but I can guarantee you that that movie's not even going to be up for discussion when it comes to, you know, like production design or best director,
right.
No matter how good it is. Right. Like,
and so. Right. And in case, you know, since we have a larger audience than what we usually see here, for those of you who are tuning in, because you saw the results of the Anime Awards and you're wondering, like, what are we alluding to with the JJK production disaster? We have a video on our YouTube channel that you can watch that talks about it. But in short, the crunch on JJK season 2 got so bad that animators and staff were freelance staff and animators were sharing on social media messages, including wanting to kill themselves. So they were like talking about suicide as a result of how hard they were being worked. And there were rumors, these aren't necessarily substantiated, but there were rumors that the MAPPA studio was trying to get people to sign NDAs so that they would stop talking about the working conditions at MAPPA. And this has been a continual sort of topic that has followed MAPPA on several of its productions. Another member who had worked on some of their anime said that they produced an entire film in like, what was that? Was it like 4 months is what they stated?
Yeah.
Which, just like, I still have a hard time
believing that. I mean, to produce a feature length animated film in 4 months almost sounds like legitimately impossible. But
right.
Again, if they are working their animators to inhuman levels, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was that allegation. And if you go back a couple years, you can even search like MAPPA working conditions on Anime News Network. I've covered some of these in the past where another freelancer had said that the working conditions there are factory-like and that there's not enough, you're not basically honing your skills in this environment so much as you're just churning things out and then it taking more time because of how many corrections need to be made and it just kind of continuing on that way. Since that, you know, MAPPA has built onto their studio and there was some kind of hoopla about that, about how it was going to be a better working environment. But that was, you know, pre this season of JJK. So as a judge myself, when I was evaluating these things, I take that kind of stuff into consideration because it's important to me. There are other frames of thought that, you know, James brought up about how to evaluate art. Personally, the conditions that art are made under are very important to me. When I consider whether to spotlight or honor something. So I was disappointed by the results in regards to JJK, but I understand that unless you're tapped into this, like this kind of stuff, a lot of people probably have no idea.
Yeah.
So,
and if I may too, to build off the point that you were making about the working conditions, and in the chat, a lot of people are talking about one of the big differences in how more established award shows tend to do things at least if we're talking about like the Academy Awards, is that, I mean, yes, at the end of the day, it's all a mechanism of the same, you know, advertising industrial machine, right? That's that's obvious. But for instance, in the Academy, you have animators recognizing animators. You have editors recognizing editors. When, you know, when someone gets nominated for best cinematography, the cinematographer is there to receive that award. Yeah. And they're being recognized by their peers for the work that they as an individual have done. With the Crunchyroll Awards, right, you have the voice actor performances, and you have like best song, right, which is nice. But then you have things like best character, or you have, you know, more like kind of cutesy, just like popularity contest stuff, right?
Right.
But when it, like for best cinematography, you know, we're not naming the people that were the DPs for these shows. For best for best action, we're not naming the key animators or the directors of the episodes, or even the chief directors of the series. We're not naming studios. We're not naming producers. They're not getting that recognition, at least not on, on the public level that you would think that this stuff deserves. And I think on the one hand, that's just a really frustrating aspect of the animation industry at large. I think anime tends to be better about it just because of how in the weeds the fandom can get about production details.
Yeah.
But I mean, still to this day, you often have to go way out of your way or hope that it's like on Sakuga blog and stuff to find information about who directed this, right? I can't read Japanese. I can't read the credits. And so I want to find the information that can help me recognize like who is producing the stuff that's being made. And if the award shows aren't doing it, then, you know, at what point is like, like what does the best cinematography award really matter if it's being voted on by millions of people who might not even know what cinematography is?
That was actually the word that kind of pissed me off the most, to be honest. And I am assuming that a lot of the vote for best cinematography was interpreted as like best action sequences by the majority viewers, because same studio, and we had quite a few. MAPPA was nominated for a lot of the awards because they are also producing a lot of anime every year, more so than is probably healthy, if I'm being honest. So they are overrepresented as well. We had Vinland Saga, and we had Chainsaw Man, and we had JJK. Those are all MAPPA shows. But for the cinematography, to not give that to Chainsaw Man is just like mind-blowing to me as anyone who was paying attention to how shots are being composed in, and you know, the framing.
There are at least three sequences in that series that I would probably consider some of the best shot sequences of anime that I've ever seen in like a televised, you know, made for TV production, like just best that I've ever seen, not just of the year, but like, this is a master class in how to frame and composite and shoot a work of art. And the fact that people probably thought, oh, but like the character animation was so fluid in that one fight scene with that guy. It's like, no, that's not what cinematography
is. That's not what that is. It's not, cinematography isn't just the same as Sakuga, right?
No, it's cinematography like, is the art of the camera. I've been teaching, and I'm sorry, I get worked up about this because I'm a huge cinematography nerd. I've even found a way to work cinematography lessons into some of my classes that aren't about film, because I believe that, you know, if people are going to be watching movies and TV more than they're reading books, then they should at least have the tools to talk about what makes them work. And so much goes into making a shot do what it needs to do that has nothing to do with like how many frames per second someone's arm is moving when they punch a guy. Like that's completely irrelevant.
Like if you look at horror, like most of horror is cinematography and then like sound design. And then and then you're getting into art direction. Like those are the things that make you scared or make, you know, give you those eerie feelings when you're, when you've got a shot going down a long hallway. I mean, it's cinematography that makes Danny's bike scene in The Shining feel really ominous before he comes up to the twins and turning the corners and all those other sorts of things. And
if an anime has ever made you feel anything, odds are that at least 70% of that was the cinematography.
Yeah.
The writing too, but
yeah.
I cannot stress enough, in a visual medium like anime, cinematic medium, how fundamental cinematography is to it working at all.
Yeah.
And the fact, and again, people are allowed to have their opinions, and I'm not here saying that JJK was some ugly piece of trash, because it wasn't.
No.
But I cannot imagine any universe in which someone could convince me that Chainsaw Man did not have better cinematography than any other show on that list.
Like, yeah. Yeah. And so that kind of goes back to, you know, what we were discussing earlier about the jury selection and then how this works in the categories themselves, right? So in my mind, what would make for a possible happier medium, at least if you want these awards to have any sort of critical meaning other than a popularity contest, is you take the awards like Must Protect at All Costs and you make those audience awards. The mm-hmm. Oscars tried that last year. They did that with a couple little awards on social media or whatever. It was cute. They're trying to, you know, keep people engaged and whatnot, because they've connect struggled with yeah, because they've, you know, had trouble with that. So, you know, delegate those over there. Maybe have a jury nominate them if you want, just to like narrow it down so you don't get every character under the sun. But leave that one up to fan vote. And then I'm sorry, like I was trying to think of how to say this without sounding like an asshole, but I'm just gonna have to be that person. You're gonna have to vet your judges better. And I know this sounds like, or could easily be interpreted as me saying, well, the judge majority didn't vote with what Lindsay thinks is the best choices, so she thinks the judging pool is poor. And that's not true. I don't know a lot of these judges. I mean, there are some names on there that I definitely recognize and are great folks, and probably those people are the ones I would say keep. But I mean, there's, you know, and there are others on there who definitely have the credentials. They had a Los Angeles Times reporter on the judge pool this year, which was great. But I do think the judging pool should be very representative. I think they're doing a great job of getting judges from all over the world to participate in this. There's also several other ANN judges like that are on there who like write for our India division and stuff like that. So I think they have made like good headway in making sure this isn't just the United States Anime Fan Awards. They want it to be global. And I think that's totally valid. But you know, regardless of country of origin, I don't know. You just maybe look a little closer at their writing or their YouTube videos or, you know, because it's only through the problem started with the judge nominations. Because if all
and
of these
the
had
lack of diversity in the pool and Although I'm going to go one step further. I'm going to say, and this is, you know, I'm not speaking for anyone but me here. I don't think a fan vote has any place in determining the winners of these categories at all.
Okay.
And that's not because I think that, like, the average Joe doesn't have, a right to determine what they think is the best show. Of course, there are probably a lot of lay people out there that know more about certain aspects of the industry and about different productions than I do. But my problem is that if we're asking ourselves what the purpose of like an award show like this is, right? If all you're doing is basically collating a tally of internet votes from people that you can't even really determine even watched what they voted for.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how many of those millions of votes voted for JJK because they like JJK in general and want it to win and don't really actually like didn't even think about the other shows?
Well, the weight of the voting is supposed to help with that. Now, I don't know if this percentage is still accurate. This is the weighted percentage that Miles Atherton, who used to work for Crunchyroll and he used to work on the anime awards for quite a long time. He's not currently with the company anymore, but he posted on Twitter over the after the awards came out and said that it was weighted 70% judges, 30% public.
I think that is in and of itself way too much because, again, 34 million votes.
Right.
If we assume that even 90% of those votes were legitimate, that's still like 3 million votes, if my math is right there, that are, did I do that right?
Don't ask me to do math.
Whatever. It's the millions of votes that yes. are potentially just based off of pure, you know, like fandom, war, internet points, you know, whatever. And yeah. the fact that that could meaningfully sway any of it to me, I think really hurts the legitimacy of these awards in general, because again, if 30% of the vote is swayed by people that don't understand fundamentally what cinematography is, then what's the point of the award?
Yeah.
If 30% of the vote is swayed by people that didn't watch any of the other shows and have no opinion on them whatsoever, that maybe only watched one anime the entire year, which was maybe JJK, then like how is their vote saying that this anime is better than all these other anime, even though we didn't see them and have no opinion on them and have no understanding of what they're doing? That yeah. to me is just, at least with a concrete, you know, finite pool of judges and voters, of, you know, writers and artists and critics and industry professionals that have some modicum of understanding of, you know, the process by which these shows are made and the context in which they're released. At least then it's a lot easier to, obviously, yeah, are there going to be people that maybe vote based on their gut or they don't watch every single thing? Yeah, of course. Yeah. There's no way, you know, unless you make people turn in little ticket stubs or screenshots of their watch histories. But
I mean, you could give them screeners and you would know whether they watched them or not.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I mean, that's a thing. They're like yeah. Oscar screeners are a thing. Like you, and also there's a more of a professional standard just by virtue of being in a profession at all. Right. Like
yeah.
as a critic, I'm not gonna like cast a vote against something that I've never seen or never watched. Right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to write a review for a movie that I saw like 10 minutes of one time and then said, oh, this sucks, whatever, 0 stars on Letterboxd. Like there's more, I don't know, there's more rigor to the process that to me makes the weight of the award a lot more meaningful than if you basically just went on Reddit and tallied all the upvoted posts and said, well, JJK is probably going to win, so let's just give it the awards. Like,
yeah, we've got some great comments here that I also wanted to highlight. Metallic64 said, do they include animators in the judging? There may be some, I'd have to go over, there is a judge page on the Anime Awards that will give you little bios of every single judge. I have not gone through it, so I can't confirm that there aren't any people with animation experience in the judging pool, but I can tell you that the majority are not, and they aren't judges. They aren't animators from the Japanese animation industry if they are there.
No.
So just putting that out there, there actually is not a lot of Japanese industry people involved in the judging pool at all. Couldn't tell you why, other than the fact that Crunchyroll doesn't really stream in Japan to begin with. But that doesn't mean they couldn't get judges who were still familiar with the shows to participate. Dennis Kidd, hey Dennis, know you. He put in here, should they do a BAFTA jury style voting, get the jury in a room and deliberate? I mean, possibly, but I would hate that. Please don't make me talk to other people.
Especially if we're talking like hundreds and hundreds of people like that, yeah. You know, and I've seen some of the comments are also saying that, you know, audience votes help maintain engagement, which like, yeah, I acknowledge that. I'm maybe a little more old school where I think having certain categories that are more, you know, that's for where the audience participation gets to show their stuff. I'm just saying that in my history of being on the internet, opening things up to public vote, especially millions of public votes, at a certain point, the numbers stop meaning anything. You yeah. know, like, I mean, I was watching today's episode of Solo Leveling, and I noticed that it was like some tens of thousands of votes, 4.9 out of 5. I'm assuming if that number is accurate, I'm assuming that most of those viewers just clicked on the 5 because they felt like that's what they were supposed to do, because Solo Leveling is peak. And they like, you know, it's not like there's a system to say you got to watch the whole episode before you hit the button.
Yeah.
And to me, it's like, well, that number doesn't mean anything now. Like,
No, yeah, no, the episode rankings on Crunchyroll don't mean anything unless they are especially low. That's when it's like, oh, something really, really went wrong. But anything, but almost everything's between a 4 and a 5 on there.
It's like Cinema Score, where like anything below a B is a disaster. That's the only, if it's above a B, you're fine. But if it's a C plus, the movie's a bomb.
Yeah.
Or if it's F, it's a masterpiece.
Asuka Yuki also asked if all the judges watch every show that was nominated entirely before judging. There's no way for me to know that.
No.
So.
And like, I mean, I don't watch every single anime of every season when I put in my top 5 shows of the year for Anime News Network, but there's a difference between like presenting what your personal picks for the best shows of the year that you saw were and being on a board of, you know, really... I was about to say the only, it's not the only, but it's very easily the biggest, you know, lion in the pride when it comes to anime streaming.
Yeah.
And basically declaring this is the anime of the year, period, right?
Yeah.
You know, stick it on the back of a Blu-ray box if they still make those.
NeroNimbus01 points out, ANN could just do their own awards, even just an article. We do actually, at the end of every year, we do our awards for best anime of the year. It goes up in multiple parts. We've got the majority of our critics who are regularly reviewing things they like, even things that they don't like, because I assigned it to them for daily streaming, participate. So you can head over there. There's also subcategories that are fun, sort of like the fluffier ones that CR does. We have, we do best song. I should open this actually. It's one of our biggest features. It's a huge undertaking and it's why I'm exhausted by the time we get into February, because we do everything for the end of winter, and then we do best of the year, and then we usually go immediately into
preview guide,
and Lindsay doesn't get a break. And my husband's like, why do you do this? I'm like, it's literally my job.
My job.
Yeah. So let me just pull this up. If you guys were interested in what we picked, this would be a good opportunity. Let me tell you what our judges picked for best of 2024 or 2023. Sorry.
Also, is there, I don't have the Wikipedia up, so I might just be confusing my Japanese release versus my Western release. Is there a reason like The Boy and the Heron wasn't eligible for best film?
Yeah, it came out after September in the United States.
Oh my gosh.
It came out in like December or January. I think I was able to see it at a screening in November in New York.
So for that, it's based on the American Western release date, not the Japanese release date.
I guess so. Because when did it come out in Japan? I don't remember off the top of my head.
Was it like January or something? I thought it was like way early in the year.
I don't think there was a whole year wait. I just posted a link in the chat if you're on Facebook or YouTube for our best of 2023.
I knew it was a J month. It was July.
It was July. Well, yeah. So I guess they must have went with the U.S. release date. If you go over to ours, it's separated by reviewer, and everyone actually picks 5. So everyone picks their top 5, which is also something that's a little bit different. James, do you remember what your number 1 was last year?
Last year, would that have been, oh no, that wouldn't have been Made in Abyss season 2. That was 20.
A lot of people picked Frieren, even though it was still running. So see, we don't do that. And so that could be kind of, you know, divisive because Frieren wasn't over yet. Some of the judges that participate will specifically not choose shows that haven't finished airing because they don't agree with that. But we don't restrict people from doing that. Nick had Ancient Magus Bride season 2 that lost Best Fantasy on Crunchyroll to Demon Slayer. I'll let the chat argue about whether Demon Slayer qualifies as a fantasy. I don't think it does in the traditional sense. Undead Murder Farce was another pick that didn't even
get nominated. I am shocked that didn't even get nominated.
It didn't even get nominated for the Crunchyroll Awards.
Was mine Vinland Saga?
It might have been Vinland Saga season 2. Rebecca had picked Power of Hope.
It was obviously Vinland Saga season 2. What am I talking about?
Yeah, Vinland Saga season 2, that one lost out to JJK at the CR Awards. Rebecca picked Power of Hope, Precure, and Full Bloom, which was the aged up Precure show that she really enjoyed. So for those of you who feel like Shoujo got shut out, you know, we've got we've got that over there. Let's see. Scott Pilgrim ended up on a lot of people's ballots. That one wasn't, I think that one came in too late for CR again. So that might be up next year.
That was
along with Pluto didn't make it. Bang Dream It's My Go made it for a couple different people. And that one actually won on the Reddit Anime Awards for jury pick, I think. But
well, and the problem is a new season of Demon Slayer is coming out next year, so we all know who's going to win next year's awards.
Yeah.
Sorry, Pluto.
Yeah. I think it was Nicholas Dupree had mentioned that because of the way these cycle, the next time around, because we have new Demon Slayer airing this month or next season, and then Attack on Titan, the final chapter, part two, will qualify. And then apparently the rest of JJK will also qualify. So we could just be seeing all of that all over again, which kind of brings up another part of why you need this sort of like limit of nominations, because beyond whether we agree that these shows fit or they don't, you know, whether they deserve it or not, it's boring for the audience if there is no surprise.
Yeah, kind no of, underdog.
There's no, no underdog.
Like, horse.
There's no dark horse. I mean, I thought Heavenly Delusion, that was my number one for last year, by the way, would have been the dark horse winner, but it was shut out of everything too. Great show.
And that's Scott, the thing is when you have so much of the vote based on recency and again, even 30% internet votes.
Yeah.
Recency bias, there aren't going to be surprises. That just kind of is fundamentally against how that works. Like,
yeah.
The public, when you get to millions of people, generally don't like surprises, but that's not what makes a good award show.
No. Yeah. There's no sort of anticipation or drama, especially when you've seen once one show starts picking everything up as you go, you're like, oh, well, this is a shutout. It's the same reason sometimes my dad turns off football games. It's like, the other team's not coming back.
They're not up by 40 points. Like this is, yeah.
I can go do something else now. What's it matter?
Like, imagine how cool it would have been. I wouldn't have even picked this. But, like, if Oshinoko won Best of the Year.
Right.
That would have been, you know, a high.
That would have been cool.
This little underdog idol mystery thing. Like, that would have been great. I would have loved that.
Yeah.
Or if, like, a genre-defining generational masterpiece like Vinland Saga Season 2 won. That would also be great.
Sends a great message. I mean, you probably shouldn't pick your show based entirely on its messaging. But it would have been great for the pacifist a Viking show to win something. I mean, again, I'm plugging our video again, but head over to our YouTube channel. We've got some interview clips with Makoto Yukimura. That man is all about it. His story is not just, you know, pie in the sky kind of stuff. He truly is all about it.
Did you see how he made one of the main characters' birthdays canonical based on a fan tweet?
No, I didn't.
It's adorable. A fan tweeted at him basically and said, hey, when is Hilda's birthday? And he just asked, well, when's your birthday? And they're like, November 23rd. And he's like, oh, it's November 23rd. And then like a month later, he was like, by the way, it's official. She was born November 23rd. She's probably 23 years old. That's canon. And it's
That's super cute. He probably did like one of those little profile pages for the character in the manga or something and wrote it down. Yeah. Okay. Well, before we like kind of wrap up, you know, this overall discussion here, I guess to sort of reiterate some of the points. I think the Crunchyroll Awards has potential quite a bit. I mean, they've got a great production. They're getting some notable celebrities to come in there to kind of hype things up. They've got great musical performances during the show. The production values are great. But as for the actual content of the show, I feel that, you know, they need to reevaluate their judge pool and put in some guardrails to prevent such a massive sweep as far as like how many times maybe a show can be not like deservedly nominated before it's just ridiculous.
And also just make the categories less, make it less of a Venn diagram. Like I was saying earlier, why do we have a best continuing series, best new series, but then just an overall best series? To me, that's completely like nonsensical.
Right.
Like, why do you need that?
That also sort of like, I feel like best continuing series exists predominantly as an olive branch to long running shonen shows specifically, because those aren't going to get nominated by best series because too many judges probably haven't watched all of it. Like, I personally would never nominate One Piece, not because it's bad, but because I haven't watched it and it's 1,000 episodes, so I'm never going to. I just don't have the time or motivation to do that. And I think that's possibly true for a lot of people who didn't jump on that early. So it's not going to get, and even if the Wano arc was amazing, and I know it had great action sequences in it, you know, Grant has talked extensively in his reviews about how good it is, but you either had to be on that train already or, I don't know, locked yourself away for a long period of time to catch up on it. So it's not going to get on the ballot for best anime of the year for its most recent season. So it gets continuing.
And if you wanted to have more like specialty categories to shout out, you know, like if you wanted to have like best legacy series or best team moment for like, you know, the One Piece crew or the JJK crew or whatever. More of those like kind of cutesy little gimmick categories to give other shows a chance to like shine in some way. Best transformation sequence for some of the magical girl shows that are never going to win this thing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, right?
Yeah.
That would be fine too. But then also like make the individual categories like best fantasy, and if the same show can win best fantasy, best continuing series, best anime of the year, like what are we doing? Like,
yeah. What's
the point of that? Like why? Yeah. Like who cares at that point if it won 5 different awards that say it's the best one? Like that doesn't.
Yeah.
And where's the best writing and award?
Yes, that's true. Yeah. There's no writing awards for like best script. So, which I feel like it could lean itself to more drama focused series or possibly even more comedy focused series because if the jokes are really funny, things like that. I wanted to bring up because I had seen this mentioned on social media that people have complained that there's no industry award. There used to be one. You guys might remember that a couple years back, there did used to be an industry award. And it became controversial because it was given to George Wada, the president of production IG/Wit Studio. He's taken on some bigger roles lately because he had made comments at a panel that I was at that I wrote about. He made some jokes about, you know, the animators working on Ancient Magus Bride. I think this was the first season, basically living off granola bars and not sleeping. And it was meant as this sort of joke, and people were like, that's not funny. And there were a lot of complaints when he got the industry award. It was also given to him the award ceremony immediately after the Kyoto Animation fire. There was some internal, like, behind the scenes stuff going on there that I can't really talk about, but suffice to say, it ended up being kind of controversial, and I think they sort of pulled it back. Okay. I feel like they should have a lifetime achievement award sort of thing, you know? So it's less of an industry icon and more like honoring like Gonagai or something like that, right? Yeah. Like folks like that
would have been Tomino up there so he can rant about how sexless and boring all the anime are.
Yeah, or it would have been nice, you know, like give that to Leiji Matsumoto before he passed very recently. You know, these guys have all gotten numerous accolades over their careers, so it's not like they're crying for not getting the Icon Award from Crunchyroll or anything. But I do think there's a way to use that to sort of honor people who have laid groundwork. So,
and also, can we get rid of the slice of life category? Because
no one knows how it works.
No one knows what that means, apparently, because I'm sorry, Bocchi the Rock, that's not a slice of life show at all. Like, in no definition of the term, other than the characters in it are living, like, and we watch them live, but
for a short period of time in their lives.
Yeah, it'd be like if we did best isekai show and you put in freaking a Vinland Saga because he technically went to a different world.
Country, yeah. I'm actually really surprised that best isekai has not been shoehorned in there. It's just a way to give an isekai an award that, because it won't get nominated for being good for anything else. I mean, they keep putting Mushoku Tensei in best fantasy and it didn't even win, which...
And it never will because it's too niche to yeah. win a popularity contest.
Yeah.
And so unless, you know, and again, if we wanted real true surprises
yeah.
and awards that also reflected, and this is me being, you know, maybe a little inside baseball, but like when it comes to the Tonys and the Academy Awards, they're also really good thermometers for what the industry is, where it's at, right? It's a good
yeah.
kind of snapshot of where the art form is, mm-hmm. because the people that are making the art are kind of, you know, their biases are being reflected, what, you know, what they thought was interesting and revolutionary was reflected. And that's just not something you're going to see unless you give smaller shows, more niche shows, the opportunity to have a chance at winning.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to just like real quick, and then maybe we'll look at some delicious and dungeon food. Soul Leveling is back this week, but they didn't do much other than get Jinwoo hooked up with the rich kid so that they mm-hmm. can, you know, and we got some sort of behind the scenes meddling between the guild and Jinwoo's friend's dad wanting to start a guild. And
there's a lot of lore dumping for those of you that are into that.
Yeah. So if I call it lore, it's like the construction company is going to seize the means of production so that we don't need the guilds anymore to economics.
Yeah. The lecture that the poor kid gets from his dad about, as you know, here's how all of the different guilds run society now. And it's like, cool, this is great.
This is
awesome.
Yeah.
This is super fun.
So real quick, I guess, and James, I'll read them out if you want to say, you know, what you would have preferred to win. So Anime of the Year, we had Bocchi the Rock, Chainsaw Man, Demon Slayer, Jujutsu Kaisen, Oshinoko, Vinland Saga Season 2.
For me, it is a ridiculously difficult tie between Chainsaw Man and Vinland Saga Season 2. I think if I were judging it on the merits of like the visual artistry, Chainsaw Man hands down.
Yeah.
Again, it is one of the most impressive productions I've ever seen in my life. I don't know if it's going to be topped anytime soon because the circumstances that allowed it to be made are probably never going to be replicated again.
Director Lef Mappa founded his own studio.
God, I can't even get into that right now. I'm going to rant for another hour.
Okay.
But as far as like the work that impacted me the most that I think will probably have the most staying power as a work of art in the industry and the fandom, I got to go with Vinland Saga. Season 2 is just, it's on another level. It really is.
I really can't argue against either of your points. They're exactly how I feel. I don't know. I feel like I would pick a different one depending on what day I woke up on. Yeah. So
Chainsaw Man is more fun to watch. Yeah. Vinland Saga is harrowing.
Kind of.
Well, yeah.
That's true. For the best continuing series, Attack on Titan, Demon Slayer, Jujutsu Kaisen, One Piece, Spy Family, Vinland Saga. Out of those, I would give it to Vinland Saga again, most likely.
This is why I think the category is kind of redundant. Same exact reasons. Like there's
People are also mentioning Trigun Stampede, which was should have been in more categories.
Yes.
Trigun Stampede Erasure is a huge problem. Best new series.
The year was so good that it wouldn't have gotten my number one. But it was easily one of the best shows I saw.
Yeah, maybe like give it character design or something, just how they adapted it to 3D CG. For best new series, if I had given Chainsaw Man best anime, I wouldn't give it best new series. I'd give that to Heavenly Delusion, I guess. This is kind of a redundant category. It's Bocchi the Rock, Chainsaw Man, Heavenly Delusion, Hell's Paradise, Oshinoko, and Zom 100.
I give it to, probably Heavenly Delusion.
Yeah.
Although Bocchi the Rock.
Right. But maybe put that one under comedy, even though it was under Slice of Life, right? Best.
Which, again, what's that mean?
Yeah. Best film, I would probably abstain from this. I didn't watch enough of these movies. I only saw Blue Giant. I wouldn't give it to Kaguya-sama, even though I understand why fans really liked it. It's still kind of not a movie. I didn't even know
that Psycho Pass got a movie, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that a recap or is that like
new? It's new Psycho Pass. Suzume, I still haven't seen. Sorry, guys. I'm like not big on Shinkai, so I still haven't bothered to watch it. And I haven't seen the first Slam Dunk, although what they did with the animation in that is really effing cool. So even if you're not.
I love the clips I've seen.
Yeah. Yeah. OG anime should have gone to Akiba Maid War, even though I love Buddy Daddies. What the fuck, you guys?
Guys, Akiba Maid War is going to be a cult classic for years to come.
It should be.
We were here. We were saying it.
We were preaching it while it was airing. No one was listening to us, but we knew that that was good shit.
Yeah, so, if you haven't watched Akiba Maid War, guys, don't read anything about it.
Don't
listen to anything we say about it after this. Pause this video. Go watch it.
It's on High Dive.
Come back and thank us. Yes.
It's on High Dive.
And it is worth the $5 subscription for a month to watch it because it'll change your life.
Yeah, it will. It will. It'll make you laugh so hard. It's the funniest thing I'd seen in a really long time.
It will make you save up money to buy tickets to go to Japan and visit a maid cafe.
Which I have done now since seeing it and was worth every penny. Best Original Anime is also weird because that's the one that got the marginal service on it. And as far as I can tell, no one's watched it ever, like at all. And we got some comments on Nick and Steve. Nick and like, it was really funny. A former columnist of ANN has not actually written for us for years and years, like logged into his ancient account to comment on the forums to tell us that he did in fact watch it. And it was like a 6 out of 10, and he's equally confused on,
was it really big in like India or like some other country?
I have no idea how it got nominated. I have no idea. If you're a judge for the Anime Awards and that you nominate, you know, just send me a DM. I'm just curious. I'm not going to attack you. I'm just wondering, like,
now again, this is the
how
kind
many
of
you were there
that I want to see more of. This is like that Flamin' Hot Cheeto movie got nominated for an Oscar, and everyone's like, the
who did this? Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to go through all of these. I guess I'll just try to say that Rue Nakayama for Chainsaw Man should have got Best Director. We already talked about Chainsaw Man for Best Cinematography. Best Art. Listen, every time Demon Slayer gets nominated, and that thing is so much like post flare bullshit, and everyone's like, this is the best animation I've ever seen. I'm like, most of that is in post.
No. And also, guys, this season of Chainsaw Man was kind of crap. Like,
it was
not Chainsaw Man, Demon Slayer.
Demon Slayer, yeah.
The season of Demon Slayer was not great.
If there was a visual effects category, this would be the visual effects category, and Demon Slayer would win it, and that's fine. I'd be okay with
Wait, now would that be where we would give it to our friends at Studio Orange who produced
yes. Okay, it would be nominated, and I would agree with it, but I would give it to Trigun in that case. So anyway, you can head over to Animators Network and go through the entire list and see, you know, if you agree, disagree, whatnot. Let's just look at some food real quick. It'll be a nice come down before I actually go eat dinner. So if you're new here, because again, we've got like a lot more people here than I usually see. We usually have a Delicious in Dungeon segment while this season is going on, where we just look at Delicious in Dungeon food and then debate whether we would eat it or not. Please join in and let us know if you too would eat this Delicious in Dungeon food. I'm going to start with this screen cap, which James has titled This Unholy Tenta Nana Thing. I don't know why. Is it because it's split into 5 pieces? Is that why it's a Tenta Nana?
It looks like a banana.
Well, it does look like a banana, but what's a...
It's a tentacle.
Got it. I was like, where is this pun coming from? I didn't quite understand. So this is tentacles dressed in vinegar, but the tentacles themselves look like a banana. James, I don't know if you know this, but maybe you do. So we have an ice cream place in my area called Salt and Straw. Have you ever been to Salt and Straw?
I have not been, no.
They have standard flavors and they also have seasonal flavors, and the seasonal flavors are always strange. And I love novelty flavors. My husband makes fun of me for this, because if there's a bag of chips that is some like strange unholy combo, I'll be like, gotta eat that. I do the same thing with all.
You'll never get a chance to again.
I may never get a chance to again, and most of the time I like it. So
you remember Do Me a Flavor, the Lay's chips that came out for a few years a while back?
Was that when they did the contests? Like
Yeah.
I tried most of those.
Yeah, they had a chicken and waffles flavored chip.
That was good.
Legitimately one of the best
chips. That one's really good. One of the ones that stuck around is All Dressed, which is just like a more vinegary barbecue, I guess. That one's also
like the
really
Canadian
good.
Flavor that's really popular.
Yes. Yeah, it's popular in Canada. So in relation to that, this tentacle that looks like a banana that was served with vinegar, I believe is a take on during World War II, ice cream milk was hard to get in like England, I think specifically. And so instead they substituted it by using plantains. And when they did this, it immediately reminded me of that, especially with the vinegar, because I'm pretty sure like plantain and vinegar was one, was a flavor they had at Salt and Straw a couple summers ago that I, of course, tried.
I've had like French vanilla with balsamic vinegar, which I feel like is probably a little similar.
Yes.
Like berries and balsamic vinegar on French vanilla. So I can definitely see the appeal.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would definitely try this one. I don't care that it's a peeled tentacle. That doesn't really bother me.
No, I mean, it's like, if I'm remembering right, it's like kind of like a plant sort of tendril thing. It's not like, I'm like you where I've had a hard time enjoying octopus lately just because they're so smart and cute.
Yeah.
But yeah, for this thing, I don't mind the source of it. What I do mind though, in the description there is, the combination of fish. Yeah. I love fish to eat, not to touch or look at.
right.
I like eating them.
Yeah.
Fish and sweet don't go together, except for salmon. Salmon is fine. But if it's like a white fish or a cod, I don't want that tasting like maple syrup or what.
Yeah.
Like that's I don't know.
I was going to say, we've specifically baked salmon with a honey glaze before. And
it's, that's great. Salmon is good with sweet. But I don't know. This kind of sweet, like a banana fruity sweet.
Yeah.
With like a
fish.
Like a, I don't know.
That's weird. Yeah. I feel like in the episode, they explained that like each quadrant was a different flavor though. So it's not like a combination of all four flavors simultaneously. You could just avoid one quadrant and none
that's
of it would be fishy, I guess. So, you know, that's an idea. This here, this delicious looking plate of hot pot food. This reminds me of getting Korean barbecue. Looks really, really good.
Some of that is kelpie, which is where we would have to ask ourselves, do we eat a kelpie?
If you don't know what a kelpie is, you haven't watched this show before, Delicious in Dungeon is on Netflix. And a kelpie is a evil water horse that beckons you to ride onto its back so that it can dive into the water and drown you and then eat you. So, you know, survival of the fittest. They defeated the kelpie and they are now eating it. I've shared on a previous episode that I have tried horse at Korean barbecue. It was another one of those things where it's like, I'll try it once. Definitely not going to get into the business of regularly consuming horse because for the same reason, I don't really eat octopus.
I've also just heard that horse isn't very good. Like it's very lean for one thing.
Yeah. Which means it's good for you, but it's not quite very flavorful because it's missing that
greasy
fat.
And
yeah.
So,
yeah,
that would be my honestly. Like I don't want to like regularly kill and eat horses.
I'm just
not super into that idea.
Yeah.
But if I was like in a country that did that, that would be a line that I wouldn't be like uncomfortable crossing. It's not like if it were like monkey brains. That's another one where I was like, nope, I can't do that.
I don't think I've had any kind of head cheese before. I think.
And even specifically monkey brains, that is too close to cannibalism for me.
Yeah.
We're too. That's my cousin over there.
Yep. I feel bad going to the zoo and just looking at the chimps because it's like, they should let you out. You look like you could have a job or something. Like, you probably got all kinds of thoughts in there. Gosh.
Yeah. If someone get this guy in the White House, you might be able to make some changes around here.
Nick points out that if Delicious and Dungeon never got a crossover with Uma Musume, we'd have more pressing questions.
That would just be a crime. That would just be murder.
Yeah, I think in the world of Uma Musume, that would be cannibalism slash...
If they could put on cute dresses and do musical numbers, that's definitely not okay.
Here's James again with the pants thing. If he can wear pants, he's not about it. Then wear little skirts and perform in an idol show, not about it. This was, I think, the last one that they showed on here. So this is a stew.
God, that looks so good.
It looks really good. As long as that meat is like fall apart in your mouth and not like a lot of stew meat. It's really chewy. I don't like chewy stew meat a lot.
That just reminds me. I had a really disappointing dinner today.
There's
a Filipino place by my house that used to serve just the best Filipino food, which is basically the exact same food that we eat on Guam. And it was so good, and I'm pretty sure they got new owners, and the food's been kind of mid ever since. But today I got their bistec tagalog, the steak and onions with the rice, and the onions are like mushy, and the steak was just, it was like four little lumps of like the chewiest, saltiest over soy sauce. Blah. And now I'm sad.
Gotta log on to Yelp after we get off of this this podcast.
Nah, I might be a critic, but I'm not about to leave a restaurant a 1-star review on Yelp. That's just, it's too hard out there for a food service.
Right. Yeah.
Unless I find something like unclean in my food, I'm not gonna.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, the last image you sent me here was the berries that they eat in the one episode. But I mean, they just like raspberries, guys. I think, you know, we're all cool with that, right?
One thing I do miss about living in the Pacific Northwest is the abundance of delicious, delicious berries that I can no longer get access to.
It's true. It's true.
Just picking blackberries off the side of the road.
People still do that.
Of course they do.
All the time. You have to. Yeah. Yeah, they're just growing everywhere. It's like it would be wrong not to. I was gonna say, like, our fridge is regularly stocked with raspberries and strawberries because my youngest, ever since he was old enough to have solids, will eat strawberries by the pound.
Oh yeah,
you'd have like a 6-month-old infant, and he's just, I'm cutting them. I was like, here's like 5, and they're all cut into quarters. And I would just have to keep coming back, and then he would just finish it off. He was the same way with watermelon. It's kind of crazy.
My wife, this is the funniest story that I have to share, speaking of berries.
Okay.
My wife gave me the funniest, most judgmental, and genuinely concerned look not too long ago, because I'd been eating strawberries for dessert.
Yeah.
And I put some like chocolate sauce on them, and I just eat them.
Yeah, or Cool Whip. Cool Whip's good.
Yeah. But you know, I just ate the strawberries whole, right? But you know, there's like a bunch of chocolate sauce from like when I drizzled it over.
And yeah,
I'm not just gonna like lick that out of the bowl. I'm not like that.
I would, but that's okay. Yeah.
I mean, I lick some of it out of the bowl, but there's a good deal, and I have my self-respect to think of. And so I put the bowl in the sink, and I just go do my thing. And I do this like a couple of times, and at a certain point, my wife. I'm just like lying in bed playing a game, and she just turns to me, and she just like very casually, like, you know, she's been working out how to bring this up in a way that isn't gonna like, you know, make me feel offended. She just says, "So, honey, I noticed that for a couple of days there've just been these bowls filled with chocolate sauce in the sink, and I'm just wondering, are you just eating bowls of chocolate sauce?" And I was like, no, I'm just putting them on strawberries. And she went, oh, because I thought like if there was other stuff, I would, you know, like I would know, but it's just a bowl with a bunch of chocolate sauce. And so she must have thought I was just pouring like a couple inches of
spooning chocolate sauce into your mouth.
Like, hon, you don't understand. This season of JJK has really got me down in the dumps.
we're just about approaching like midlife crisis era, so yeah. You know, we could just switch to start eating sauce only diet out of bowls.
It's that old joke from the Rugrats where Stu Pickles is like making Angelica pudding, and his wife is like, "Why are you making pudding at 3 a.m? Because I've lost control of my life. It's like, why are you eating straight chocolate sauce out of a bowl? Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with you know, as long as it's your designated bottle of whipped cream. Of
just and as long as your lips don't touch the nozzle, right? As long as you keep a little
bit some heavy breathing onto the nozzle once you get it that close. But I mean, put your name on it. Put your name on it. It's yours. Yeah. You can do whatever you want with it. I'm not here to judge anybody. I'm 37 years old next month. Do whatever the fuck you want. I don't care anymore. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for everyone who tuned in. If you had a great time, you know, enjoy the discussion. Make sure to leave us a comment on the video. We're streaming right now on Twitter and Facebook and YouTube, of course. Give us a like and a follow. We're here on Tuesdays every week, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Sometimes we've got hot topics like this. Sometimes we just have a good time. Go watch last week's video where we talked about all the Pokemon types and which ones were the best. We had some good arguments in that one. James doesn't like Hisuian Growlithe, which is just wrong.
What about it? They did my boy dirty. That's not okay. It could have just been that particular picture.
I think he's adorable. So I don't have anything to add to that. But James, thanks so much for sitting down with me and going over the anime awards, and I'll see you next week.
Anytime.
Anytime. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.